I Hate Politics is a podcast about a human activity we love to hate. I'm Sunil Dasgupta. Maryland's Interstate 495 and Interstate 270 toll lane plan is one of the most controversial transportation projects in the Washington, D.C. region. While Virginia has added capacity to its section of the Capitol Beltway using a public-private partnership with an Australian company, Transurban, to add high-occupancy toll lanes or hot lanes, Maryland's section of the Beltway has remained untouched. The election of Democrat Wes Moore raised the hope that the toll lane project might be shelved. But after nearly a year of consideration, the Moore administration has decided to go ahead with the toll lane project. Much of the controversy over the toll lanes rests on the idea of congestion pricing. If roadways are clogged, pricing them correctly should relieve pressure. For decades after the interstate system was built, however, federal law prevented the tolling of interstate highways built with federal money. States could continue tolling sections of the interstate system built before with state resources. But a new law in the early 1990s relaxed the rules. Yet the history of congestion pricing has been fraught. I caught up with veteran transportation planner Patrick DeCorla Souza, who in a journal article offered the latest spin on congestion pricing, the HOTTER lanes, which stands for high occupancy, transit, and tolled vehicles on existing lanes with rewards. Stick around as we decode that. Did you know that a 14% shift in the number of peak time vehicles can reduce delays by 80%? I Hate Politics is a podcast about our neighborhoods, workplaces, schools and streets, and our local governments as they function in diverse and democratic societies. This means our politics are dirty, messy, sometimes corrupt, with often self-serving politicians. But no matter how much we may hate politics, we are never exempt from it, even when we refuse to participate. In fact, the purpose of politics is to keep society functioning precisely when we don't agree with each other, like now. Music for this episode comes from Washington, D.C. composer, songwriter, and pianist Oren Levine. We are pulling music from his album Making Up for Lost Time. Barbara Papendrop and Aaron Myers on vocals, Lionel Lyles on tenor sax, and Herb Scott on alto sax. You can find more music from Oren Levine at ohljazz.com. In the news this week, if you travel on University Boulevard in Wheaton, you will see new red-colored bus-only lanes between Amherst and Dennis Avenues, a distance of about 2 miles that will be used primarily by Metro bus routes C2 and C4, which carry about 9,000 passengers daily. Cars are only allowed in the bus lane within 100 feet of a turn intersection. The University Boulevard project is part of the county's program to build dedicated lanes to help public transit move faster. It has been hard for the county's Department of Transportation, MCDOT, to build dedicated lanes. The county's only functioning bus rapid transit service along Route 29, Colesville Road, runs on dedicated lanes in the northern section where traffic congestion is not that bad. But there are no bus-only lanes in the southern section of the route, such as going through the congested Four Corners area. There, traffic is snarly and dedicated bus lanes would really help. MCDOT has also completed two other dedicated bus lane projects where they are needed less, on Crystal Rock Drive and Aircraft Road in Germantown. But projects in the lower county, including the bus rapid transit lines on Colesville Road, Veers Mill, near Wheaton Metro Station, and along Flower Avenue in Tacoma Park, Long Branch area, are delayed based on their project delivery dates. Building dedicated bus lanes is challenging. The University Boulevard Bus Lane Project, which involved lane coloring and signage, not actual road construction, was delayed, according to MCDOT itself, due to construction and funding issues. Budgets are a permanent question mark over all projects. When many of the roads where dedicated bus lanes would really make a difference are actually owned by the Maryland State Highway Administration. And typically, the state and the county have played hot potato with projects like this. Last year, the State Highway Administration ran its own pilot program on University Boulevard, installing bike lanes, but those were dismantled because the state said due to lack of use and criticisms of safety. The coloring of the bus lanes this time was a county project that was supported by the region's biggest transit service, the Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority, WMATA, which operates Washington Metro and the Metro buses. Speeding up Metro bus service on the C2 and C4 routes is one of the objectives of the University Boulevard Bus Lane Pilot Program. The departments of transportation involved in the project will reevaluate next winter if the bus lanes worked. For most local governments, public safety has been a challenging problem. A couple of weeks ago on the show, the now newly elected mayor of Rockville, Monique Ashton, described the problem in this way.
Rockville has been awarded the 12th safest suburb by a number of sources. And so I'll say, generally speaking, we are very safe. However, we have seen some changes that really had an impact, especially post-COVID and inflation, where we see that there's some pressure points in our community that are causing some changes, right? We're seeing some changes in juveniles getting more involved. We're seeing issues of shoplifting. We're seeing some organization of people who try to just open car doors. But I'll say overall, we are very safe comparably across the county, the region, and the nation.
The challenge of policing for perception of the lack of safety is considerable. And this week, Montgomery County government sought to address the issue with a new security camera rebate program covering homes and businesses within zones designated by the Montgomery County Police Department. The program limits homes to one camera up to the cost of $250, which would cover popular products such as the Ring door camera. Businesses, including nonprofits, can get rebates for up to 5 cameras. To get the rebates, homeowners and businesses have to agree to record and save the video footage from the cameras for at least 7 days and allow Montgomery County Police on-demand access to the video. The cameras have to be installed on the building exterior and should not be used solely for the purpose of recording video of private property belonging to others. Montgomery County Police have identified camera-eligible locations primarily in Germantown, Montgomery Village, and Gaithersburg areas, and then in Wheaton, Glenmont, and Aspen Hill, along Rockville Pike in North Bethesda, and in Olney. Not all the areas are high crime, and it appears to be a part of perception policing. Urban areas such as New York and downtown DC have long used camera surveillance, but of course crime itself has gone up and down based on other factors. But as Ashton's description makes clear, local governments do feel a responsibility to address the perception of the lack of safety. In education news, the Maryland Association of Counties, MACO, has asked the state government to provide more guidance and more flexibility with regard to the new education law blueprint for Maryland's future. In a letter to the state leadership, MACO, speaking on behalf of the state's 24 counties, has said that the blueprint applies a one-size-fits-all approach to education investment and implementation that does not take into account our state's diverse local government capacities, processes, and abilities. In particular, asking counties to meet the fiscal needs of the blueprint legislation is challenging local government ability to meet other needs within their jurisdictions, and hence the call for flexibility. County governments face a great challenge in this respect because they do not administer school districts, which are run by independent school boards that have their own and sometimes competing priorities. This has been a particular problem with respect to interpreting the requirements of the blueprint law, currently exclusively in the hands of the independent school boards. Essentially, the MACO letter is asking the state for new legislation that would give county governments authority to shape and evaluate operational budgets of school districts, over which they only have informal influence at this time. This would be a big break from a long-standing Maryland tradition of trying to remove direct political and partisan influence from education policy. Despite this approach, and in keeping with the reason for this podcast, efforts to remove politics from public matters, such as public education, have never worked. School and education politics have held and continue to hold central place in the politics of every county in the state. There has not been an official response from the Maryland Association of Boards of Education as yet, but expect one to arrive in time for the new legislative session that starts January 2024. Meanwhile, Montgomery County Public Schools has hired former county council member and former school board member Nancy Navarro as an external affairs advisor in the office of the superintendent. The school district has been embattled with several public relations failures, including the handling of the Beidelman case, where a middle school principal was promoted to high school principal despite recorded complaints of sexual harassment and bullying. But in light of the MACO letter seeking more control over school district operating budgets on behalf of county governments, former council member Navarro is someone with the political heft to balance the argument on behalf of the school district and the school board. She became term limited last year on the county council and ran as the lieutenant governor pick for the 2022 Democratic gubernatorial aspirant and former Prince George's County executive Russian Baker. And she would be the highest profile employee of the school district and the school board. You're listening to I Hate Politics. I'm Sunil Dasgupta. I'll be back with transportation planner Patrick DeCorla-Souza to talk about the history and evolution of congestion pricing and toll lanes.
I'm helpless. I'm hopeless. I walk around the house. It makes no sense. I'm feeling in a bind without you. Confusing, I'm losing my grip, so I sit and stop moving. I'm not in my right mind without you.
Patrick de Corla Souza, welcome to I Hate Politics.
Thank you for having me, Sunil.
You are an expert on congestion pricing. Can you start us off with the history of congestion pricing, how it comes about and how it develops over time?
There are reasons why the highways are congested today, and that is primarily because people who use these highways are using it free of charge. Congress passed a law in 1991, which allowed congestion pricing on federal aid highways. And so as a result of that law, states and local governments had the ability to use congestion pricing in their toolbox to manage congestion. It took a while for states and municipalities to take advantage of it. The first municipality that took advantage of this was San Diego. What they really did was simply allowed single-occupant vehicles to use the I-15 HOV lane if they paid a fee.
HOV stands for High Occupancy Vehicle Lanes. When did that start?
HOV lanes came about as a result of the energy crisis in the 70s, right? And we wanted to encourage carpooling. So one way to do that was to give some benefit to carpoolers.
Was there any pushback on that?
Actually, no. Very interesting. The public did not have any opposition to giving preference to carpoolers. Now, it is true that in some cases where, for example, in New Jersey, these lanes were not very well used, there was pushback. And there were HOV lanes that were converted back to general purpose lanes or regular lanes. Everybody could use them.
Right. But also parallelly, we have always had a toll road system, right? That where it's the tolling is about access to the roadway itself, not about congestion at all. Whether or not congested, you are going to pay.
Even before the interstate system was put in place, that is after 1956, states were already building highways. And in order to pay for the high construction costs, they were charging tolls on these highways. The Pennsylvania Turnpike is a good example. Ohio Turnpike, Chicago Skyway.
And so we had a tolling system and we had an HOV system. And in 1991, finally, in San Diego, they brought those two together. Is there pushback at that time?
The main concern that was raised was the issue of equity. In San Diego, the way they could counteract that equity argument was by saying all of the toll revenue generated from these supposedly drivers who are able to pay, more well-off drivers, would be spent on transit. Federal law does not allow the revenue that is generated from a highway to be spent on purposes that are not associated with getting people from point A to point B on that highway. Now, you can spend it on the facility itself to improve, you know, traffic management, or you can use it to increase bus service.
Now, when they started to make these high occupancy toll lanes, is that also the start of public-private partnerships in this respect?
It allowed public-private partnerships because usually for public-private partnerships to be effective, you have to have a revenue source. However, getting a public-private partnership into place is very expensive. you know, there's a lot of legal, technical, financial experts that have to be involved. A single HOV to hot lane, you know, there's not much construction cost, right? It's limited. And so there was not much interest from the private sector in investing in HOV to hot lanes.
That conversion only starts to make sense when there is a mega project rather than small conversions, because the mega project produces enough revenue that pays for the transaction costs that you talked about.
Exactly. I'll give you the example of the Capitol Beltway in Virginia. That project costs about $2 billion, right? So the revenue stream over the concession period has to generate at least roughly $2 billion. If it doesn't, the state has to provide a subsidy. Now, that actually happened. The state had to provide about a 20% subsidy of that $2 billion cost. But the private sector was interested because the transaction costs to put that in place were a reasonable percentage of the cost of the project. Virginia's case is very interesting. They had initially proposed HOV lanes on the Capitol Beltway. They were going to add HOV lanes, two HOV lanes in each direction. And that was around 2000, 2001, something in that time frame. There was a lot of pushback from the public because homes were being taken, something like 200 homes were going to be taken. And the private sector came in and said that they would be willing to build that project for free if they could toll the facility.
Did the private company, and this is Transurban from Australia,
mm-hmm.
did they have a plan that involved not taking of any homes?
Exactly. They were able to get their expert designers to redesign that facility with the same two added lanes in each direction, but without taking any homes.
That's interesting. If this is just a design fix, then why can't we just hire the designer instead of hiring the entire company?
So that's a very good question, you know, and there, let me put it this way. In normal construction, a designer is in one place, the constructing company is another place, and they don't talk to one another, all right? So the designer doesn't know what capabilities the construction company has, and the construction company doesn't know what the designer can do. So in a public-private partnership, you bring them together, and they talk to one another, and they work together to design the project.
Well, Pat, you just described every home renovation. Do you think that the Virginia hot lanes, the high occupancy toll lanes, have met their purpose?
They have provided a choice to people if they are in a hurry to get to their job site, or whether they are in a hurry to go home in the evening. They have an alternative, which they didn't have before.
You could have solved that problem in several other ways. Singapore does it. Hong Kong does it. London does it. The choice between being late for your flight and paying $30 in tolls is a choice that is made here in Virginia.
Yes.
I mean, they created the choice, not just a solution to the problem. They created the problem itself. If you were looking at the project in hindsight, what do you think they got wrong?
When you expand highway capacity, what you do is you make things better, not only for those in the managed lanes, but you also make things better for people in the regular lanes, because some people move over from the congested regular lanes to the managed lanes, and they relieve congestion on the regular lanes. Now, that is great. To begin with, that is great. But what happens is, over a period of time, you get something called induced traffic. So there are people who were not traveling to Tyson's Corner, let's say, who now will decide, yes, there's no congestion, so I'm going to drive. I won't take the train, or I won't take a bus or a carpool, because it's much easier to drive and much more convenient.
That's right. And so it hasn't succeeded by that measure, right?
Well, it depends what were your goals. We can't impose tolls on the freeway system, only on certain lanes. So congestion pricing is not allowed by law. And if you even if it was allowed by law, if you did it on the regular lanes, you would be thrown out of office at the next election. So, you know, we can't solve the problem because the law ties our hands, and our culture of free roads ties our hands.
But you have something of a solution, and you're calling it the hotter lanes, H-O-T-T-E-R lanes. What is that?
So that's a new idea I came up with just because of all these issues. Hotter actually stands for high occupancy, transit, and tolls on existing lanes with rewards. So that makes it hotter. What I said in some papers I've authored is that we can achieve all our goals and achieve them even better. All we need to do is use a regular lane, one of the general purpose lanes, and convert it to a hot lane. People will say, oh, if you do that, you're going to cause a lot of congestion on the remaining lanes. You know, that is would be true without the rewards portion of hotter lanes. When you have congestion, congestion rises to a certain level, and then people say, I'm not going to travel anymore on this highway, it's too congested. So what the Federal Highway Administration has found in the done research, even on I-270, and they found that all you need to do is reduce traffic by 10 to 14%, and you will be able to eliminate, you know, 80% of the delay. So 10 to 14% is the magic number of single occupant drivers that we need to get off the highway. So how can we do that? We can't impose tolls. You know, if you impose tolls, yes, people, you know, 10 to 14% would quickly disappear and the highway would flow freely. The answer to me is very simple. Remember, that single lane that we took and converted into a hot lane, we have created space there that can be used by high occupancy vehicles, that carpools and transit vehicles. Now, carpools and transit vehicles, by definition, carry a lot more people than the other lanes. So now we have a situation where we can have double, three times, four times the person throughput on that single lane than we have on the remaining lanes. What we really need to do is get a sufficient number of people, 10 to 14% is what the Highway Administration says, to move from those regular lanes and into carpools and transit. Faster travel time is one inducement, but what if it's that, if that's not sufficient and we only get 5% to move? What about, you know, we need 10, 14, 15%. So how do we get the remaining people to shift? There are only two ways you can encourage people to shift. One is reducing travel time. We did that. We got only 5%. And the other way is to reduce their costs. So how can we reduce their costs? You know, they're going to drive, they're going to have the same costs, right? If they're in transit, they have to pay a fare. It's the same cost. So how do we reduce those costs? Well, we can give them cash rewards. So what we would do is pay cash if you are in a carpool or if you ride the bus. Now, this combination of travel time savings and cost reduction is the magic that gets you to the 10% or the 15% you need to shift into that regular lane.
What mechanism are you going to use to transfer this cash reward?
There's a company in Dallas, Texas that works with the MPO there to provide
discounts. What is the MPO?
Metropolitan Planning Organization is just like the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments here. What this Council of Governments in Dallas does is provides a cash discount to carpools who use the toll facilities, which are basically hot lanes or express lanes in the Dallas area. And the way they identify who is carpooling is they provide all of these carpoolers with an app. And the app simply—
Like a phone app.
Just like a phone app on their smartphone. Mm-hmm. And all they have to do is when they leave home, they turn it on. And when they get on the facility, you know, because of the GPS, you know, the app knows that they are eligible for a discount if they have another carpooler next to them who also has the app. Now, in Dallas, even children are considered to be eligible as carpoolers. What they do is give them a small Bluetooth device, which can speak to the smartphone of the driver. And that's how they identify that there is another person in the vehicle.
I am concerned about the guy that has two phones.
This MPO, or Metropolitan Planning Organization, has done studies and identified, you know, the violation rates. They found like 1% were cheating, and they were able to send them warnings. They would be thrown out and not be eligible for this program at all. So right now, they claim there's a 0% violation rate.
I don't see how this can even be enforced.
So the way they do it is, you know, they know where your phones are at all times, right? So if you're a carpooler, carpooling with somebody else, you don't expect that carpooler to stick to you throughout the day, all right? And they can identify what is happening after you end your trip or get off the freeway. And so that's how they identify the 1% of cheaters who are doing that. And then, of course, you know, ended up with zero.
Do you have an idea of the throughput right now on the Dallas toll road where this is happening?
I don't have the data, but, you know, it's the Council of Governments there is very happy with the program, and they've been, you know, presenting their results at Transportation Research Board meetings, and it's very successful.
Now, you have suggested that Maryland adopt this hotter lane approach as it considers its decision on what to do with Maryland's portion of I-495, the Capitol Beltway.
So I proposed a solution. Now, you know, of course, I know about the opposition. And what I'm suggesting is hotter lanes can be implemented right now You don't have to do any construction, and you would generate excess revenue, which could go into transit. It could support, you know, for example, I just read this morning, there's a $2 billion shortfall in the Maryland budget, and you can't pay for transit improvements. And you would, even after paying out rewards, what my analysis shows is about half of the revenue you generate would be available to invest in transit or anything else. And it could help with the budget situation right now and immediately. You would get transit service implemented, the kind of bus rapid transit I mentioned. And, you know, one issue is you would have to work with Virginia DOT because, you know, if traffic is going HOV or HOT or transit over the Woodrow Wilson Bridge, what happens after that? Right now, the existing lanes don't begin till about the Dulles Toll Road. So you would have to work with Virginia to create or extend the HOV lane. So they would have to also agree to take a regular lane, at least up to the Dulles Toll Road where the managed lanes begin.
Now, I believe that because Transurban controls or runs the high occupancy toll lanes in the Virginia side, that they will have to decide. And if that is the case, why should they agree?
That is a good question. It might involve some renegotiation of the contract. You know, I assume they actually have the lease right now because they're doing some construction on that portion of the Beltway. So they would have to agree to create that HOV lane right now. I think VDOT would also have to agree to, because this is only going to be temporary because, you know, in a few years when they get done with construction, it will extend all the way to the Woodrow Wilson, to the American Legion Bridge. So that problem will resolve itself. And they should, at least if I were Transurban, I would be pleased that you're bringing some additional customers to me from Maryland on your hot lane, right? Right now, there's nothing, correct? So you would be creating a customer base for them, which would increase their toll revenue on that segment up to the Dulles Toll Road.
Have you heard from Maryland Department of Transportation any feedback on your proposal for hotter lanes?
Well, I've actually communicated with Maryland DOT. I sent comments way back when they were seeking comments on the environmental impact statement. I got a response saying they would consider it for the I-495, that is the eastern segment of the Capitol Beltway. But I have not heard any further on that. But more recently, when I heard about this outreach from the secretary seeking input.
You mean Maryland Transportation Secretary Paul Wiedefeld?
Right. On the website, they were saying they're going to only look at this segment now, and they look at I-270 later, and I-495 eastern segment. I said, if you don't look at all segments at the same time, you're going to foreclose some options. You can't do planning piecemeal.
What options would you foreclose?
A hotter lane option. If you build these humongous two extra lanes, and then you get to the Beltway, the eastern segment of the Beltway, and you can't go any further, you're going to create a huge bottleneck right there. Same thing on I-270. You're taking the whole two extra lanes and dumping them on I-270, and all you're doing is pushing that backup, which is currently behind the bridge. it'll just be moved up a little bit. And so you're not going to achieve, people will be stuck in the same traffic. But if you have a comprehensive look at the entire network, you can solve the problem, is what I said.
You haven't heard from Secretary Weedeful?
I have not heard. I put the comment on the website. I wrote a letter to Secretary Weedeful, but I have not heard back. Yes.
Are there any weaknesses to this idea of the hotter lanes? What should Maryland be careful about as it considers this?
Well, the most important thing is, you know, the public needs to be educated. People just don't realize that it's only 10 to 14% of traffic that needs to be shifted in order to completely relieve congestion.
So let me clarify this. Your plan for hotter lanes does not involve any roadway expansion.
That is correct. And, you know, it can be done right away. And by the way, it doesn't foreclose expanding the highway in future. So, you know, highway advocates shouldn't be afraid of this option. All you're doing, you can sell it as a temporary measure that to see as a pilot, just to see if this whole idea works. You know, they did that in Stockholm when they introduced congestion pricing. They told the public, we're simply trying this for 6 months. And after 6 months, you decide if you want to continue congestion pricing. Maryland can do exactly the same thing. They can say, oh, we'll take this lane only for 6 months. You take a look at it, see how much you like it. If you don't like it, we'll go back to your original congestion and we'll continue to do environmental impact statements and studies and fight legal battles. And finally, maybe 10 years from now, we'll get you the two extra lanes and only on the Capitol Beltway.
Patrick DeCorla-Souza, thank you for taking the time to explain hotter lanes.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
You're listening to I Hate Politics. I'm Sunil Dasgupta. I'll be back with a wrap-up, including lessons from my conversation with transportation planner Patrick DeCorla-Souza. You're listening to I Hate Politics. I'm Sunil Dasgupta. What lessons can we draw from my conversation with transportation planner Patrick DeCorla-Souza? First, the choices states make with respect to congestion pricing are really set by the federal government. Interstate highways built with federal aid cannot be tolled except under very specific circumstances. The 1991 law requires states to get approval for congestion pricing projects, and generally, it seems states need to add new road surface to be able to toll it. Patrick DeCorla-Souza's plan to toll existing road space requires a specific federal waiver, which is a possibility, but it is not something that would likely interest private corporations such as Transurban. As DeCorla-Souza himself said, the transaction costs of converting existing lanes to HOV were relatively so high that private participation was not attractive. I expect this would be true of hotter lanes as well. Second, if we make a value judgment based on climate action or lifestyle and not build more road surface, we should work on congestion pricing models to allow vehicles to move rather than turn highways into parking lots every morning and evening. The frustration of an unmoving roadway becomes a political dead weight on elected leaders. That weight, I would argue, is driving the Moore administration's decision to pick up and run with the Hogan plan for 495-270. Even though some of their strongest supporters in Central Maryland are likely to be upset about it. Going into a second election in 2026 without addressing the traffic congestion problem on the Beltway is a hard sell in a state that could very well elect a Republican governor despite being deep blue. Appropriate congestion pricing could be the answer and an opportunity rather than a burden. Third, DeCorla Souza talks about the dangers of looking at the Capitol Beltway problem in piecemeal fashion. There is the American Legion Bridge and the western section of 495, which is also closely tied to the southern 270 section, even though 270 currently has more lanes than the Maryland section of 495. The Moore administration is now separately considering the eastern section of the Beltway, where Virginia and Maryland are connected by the Woodrow Wilson Bridge. Virginia has proposed that the built-in transit capacity on Woodrow Wilson Bridge be converted to toll lanes. The project has the support of Prince George's County leaders. And then there is the northern section of 270, Shady Grove, and up to Frederick. Political and technocratic solutions often conflict over time horizons. While technocratic solutions such as DeCorla Souza's take a long-term view, political leaders live and die by four-yearly elections, and they tend to have shorter-term views. Typically, this means solving problems part by possible part. Do what can be done now, even if it means extra costs, including uncoordinated solutions in the future. But long-term technocratic solutions are often things that are impossible in the first place. The balance between long and short-term and between technocratic and political imperatives is often the essence of modern governance. Because they require the agreement of Transurban and the Commonwealth of Virginia under a Republican governor, Glenn Youngkin, the possibility of Maryland adopting hotter lanes is, in my estimation, quite low. Things may change if there is a Democratic governor in Virginia, but I'm not sure how much. The congressional delegations from Virginia, Democrats and Republicans, have asked for an investigation of the process by which Maryland won the location of the new FBI headquarters in Greenbelt. These battles are not going away. That's all for this episode of I Hate Politics, where we aim to stem the decline in local news by working with community voices. I Hate Politics is produced by me, Sunil Dasgupta, and assistant producer Daniel Galeo, with support from the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. I direct UMBC's political science program at the universities at Shady Grove in Montgomery County, where, among other things, we explore and learn about politics, government, and society close to home. Music for this episode comes from Washington, D.C. composer, songwriter, and pianist Oren Levine. We are pulling music from his album Making Up for Lost Time. Barbara Papendrop and Aaron Myers on vocals, Lionel Lyles on tenor sax, and Herb Scott on alto sax. You can find more music from Oren Levine at ohljazz.com. If you want to share your music on the show or know someone else who might want to, please email us at producer@ihbpod.org. I hope you'll subscribe and share the podcast as we bring you stories about politics close to you and to your home. See you next time.